Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Good morning and welcome to Africa Link with me, Assumpta Latus. In this edition, we'll be following up the Nigerian regional polls to elect governors and state assemblies and their importance in Nigeria.
The governors are very, very influential, bearing in mind that apart from controlling their own votes, they also control the votes of local government area councils. That makes them to have the financial muscles and capability.
We will also be having a report on the Kenyan government decision to give UNHCR 3 months to relocate all Somalis living at the world's largest refugee camp, Dadaab.
Mambo ya Dadaab na mambo ya refugees.
Regarding the issue of Dadaab and the issue of Somali refugees, we have spoken to the UNHCR people. We have told them that in the next 3 months they should relocate Dadaab camp to Somalia.
These stories plus our radio drama series Learning by Ear coming up right here at Africa Link.
Top story.
But first, in Nigeria. Nigerian President-elect Muhammadu Buhari has made more gains in weekend's regional polls. The All Progressive Congress Party has retained the economic capital Lagos State governorship, consolidating Buhari's administration power. The elections, however, have been marred by violence, with 66 reported incidents, leaving at least 9 people dead. To find out how many states have declared their results so far, as results continue to trickle in, I spoke to our correspondent in Abuja, Ben Shamang.
So far, about 20 states have declared the results. And of course, APC is in a clear winning. It is leading. If you look at the voting pattern, in the Niger Delta areas, the People's Democratic Party is leading. Same thing with some eastern states. But when it comes to central Nigeria, northeastern part of Nigeria, and northwest and even southwest, of course, the All Progressive Congress is leading.
The APC won the battleground, Lagos. How wide was the margin?
The margin was not that wide. Definitely, it was a very keen contest.
There are also reports of violence in Rivers State and other areas. Can you tell us what happened there?
The usual thing is that some people feel that they've been cheated. But again, you also find out that some others will just do some ballot stuffing. Some will do ballot boxes snatching. And of course, the police would not fold their arms. Some hoodlums would throw some guns, fire guns, shots here and there, and at that point they just snatch the ballot papers. And the Independent National Electoral Commission will always cancel such results. And again, you now find some upheavals. Some people saying they don't agree. It happened in Rivers State, it happened in Akwa Ibom State, it happened in Plateau State, and some areas of Bauchi.
How influential are these governors in Nigeria?
The governors are very, very influential, bearing in mind that apart from controlling their own votes, they also control the votes of local government area councils. That makes them to have the financial muscles and capability. Outside that, they also have a say in appointing who becomes a minister, because in Nigeria, it is mandatory that every state must produce a minister.
Ben Shamang in Abuja. There are also reports of a mass exodus of PDP politicians to the opposition APC party. How much opposition will the APC face when it does come to power? A question by Abubakar Jallo to Tukur Abdikadir, a lecturer of political science at the University of Kaduna.
It appears as if we are actually up for a very less opposition, at least for the time being. The PDP is actually being depleted by the day, and this certainly will have a serious impact as far as the politics of opposition is concerned in the new dispensation.
Did the PDP perform really that bad that you have all these politicians moving towards the APC?
Certainly, they have had a very disappointing tenure. In fact, it's what people have failed to understand is that for the past 12 years, they've been losing elections. But actually, the magic wand was the introduction of the card reader. The card reader did the whole thing, not even the popularity of the opposition. Yes, it matters, no doubt about it. People have been so disenchanted and disillusioned with the state of affairs in the last 5 years. The stupendous amount of money that the government actually made in the last 4 years before the current problems associated with the oil market generally in the world. But they have actually not utilized it. Rather, they have promoted corruption to the highest level of governance. Some of the public officials who were found guilty and subsequently jailed were actually surprisingly pardoned, like the likes of former governor of Bayelsa, the current president Kinsman, the son of former head of state General Sani Abacha, the current governor of Ekiti State, Ayo Faiji. They are all granted presidential pardon, which enabled them to partake in the political process. So definitely the failure of the government, especially the federal government led by PDP, is responsible for the current state of disenchantment generally with the party. And those that are in the party, some of them are not decamping to APC simply because they are convinced that the PDP has failed or that APC has got a lot to offer to the people of Nigeria. Rather, I think they are trying to use it as a ploy to escape from possible prosecution.
Is this a common trend in Nigeria that when a political party wins an election, you have politicians from the opposition parties joining that political party?
Well, generally, it's not a common thing. The problem is that we've never had it so bad in the history of Nigeria. Now people are realizing that, look, since we are able to have free and credible elections, people that have failed us, they should be made to realize that they have really failed. And the people that have succeeded in winning elections now, if they listen to them, if they perform well, they will win in the next 4 years. If they falter, certainly people will come out and vote them out of power again.
Tukur Abdulkadir, a lecturer of political science at the University of Kaduna. You're listening to Africa Link with me, Assumpta Latus.
Africa Link. Every weekday on DW Deutsche Welle.
The Kenyan government has given the UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, 3 months to repatriate all Somali refugees at the world's largest refugee camp, Dadaab. At least 600,000 Somalis are living there at the camp. This decision follows the attack by the Somali militant group Al-Shabaab at Garissa University College that has killed almost 150 students. The Kenyan government believes the Islamist militants have been using the camp to recruit and radicalized young Somalis. As our correspondent in Nairobi, James Shimanyura, reports, this new move has come after a major panic broke out on Sunday at the Kikuyu student campus of the University of Nairobi.
An electrical transformer exploded early on Sunday on the Kikuyu campus of the University of Nairobi and caused a mass panic. Students thought the campus was being attacked by Islamist extremists. A male third-year student died and at least 141 were injured. The dead student was among others who jumped from residence halls as high as 5 floors up. The Somali militant group Al-Shabaab is responsible for many attacks in Kenya, including the Westgate Mall siege and the massacre at Garissa. Hence, the Kenyan government wants all Somali refugees out of Kenya. Vice President William Ruto said at a press conference that the repatriation process will begin at Dadaab, the refugee camp for Somalis.
Mambo ya Dadaab na mambo ya refugees.
Regarding the issue of Dadaab and the issue of Somali refugees, we have spoken to the UNHCR people. We have told them that in the next 3 months they should relocate Dadaab camp to Somalia. If they fail to shift the camp in the next 3 months, we shall load those Somali refugees on lorries and buses and take them to their home. We have ordered their businesses to be closed. Those responsible for the businesses will be flown to their country.
The Kenyan government believes that Al-Shabaab militants used Dadaab as nerve center for planning the attack on Garissa University, as Parliamentary Majority Leader Aden Duale explained.
This cause is bigger than any clan, it's bigger than any trivialities. This is about our motherland. It is about securing Kenya. UNHCR has 3 months to relocate the refugee camp in which we believe, and the intelligence community believe, is a safe haven for Al-Shabaab.
The three-month period given to relocate the Dadaab camp refugees shocked Adrian Edwards, UNHCR's spokesperson.
Blanket measures that target people based on nationality or membership of a group is discriminatory. It can create suffering for innocent people and is usually ineffective. We are in close contact with the government of Kenya to see how its security concerns can be addressed in accordance with international legal norms and practices.
Whether UNHCR or the Somali refugees will contest the government's decision in court is yet unknown.
James Shimanyula in Nairobi. Agriculture remains an attractive field for many young entrepreneurs in Ghana. Ghana's agro-based economy has failed to attract young men and women who are about to start up new businesses. There is a high demand for fruits and vegetables, but the country does not produce enough to meet the demands. A young Ghanaian, Emmanuel Darko, saw this gap and decided to change the mentality by starting a vegetable business. Isaac Kaleji has more.
It's a sunny day, and at this farm in the eastern region, scores of farmers are busy cultivating their crops. It's a large hectare, purposely for the production of vegetables like pepper, onions, tomatoes, cabbage, and carrot, among others. Yakubu Sani is lead farmer here.
We come here and water the plants in small bits. We then weed and put fertilizer on them. After 3 weeks, we harvest. You make a profit when there is good business, but when the market is down, there is no profit.
The major challenge for farmers like Yakubu is marketing their produce after all the hard work. Their harvests have been poor in the last decade and were unable to meet higher demands. To fill in this gap, Ghana imports about 50% of its vegetables from Burkina Faso and Togo. This is where a local Ghanaian business group, Babao Foods, came in.
Babao Foods Limited is an early stage agribusiness company with a social outlook. Basically, we started off as a farm. That was about 2 years ago.
That's Emmanuel Darko, the CEO of Babao Food Limited. Ghana's capital, Accra, alone places a yearly demand of up to $400 million for vegetables. Darko anticipated huge profit, hence he quit his job in the banking sector and started up Babao Food Limited.
2 years into working as a banker, I remember reading an article on a media website whereby they said maybe by the year 2020, if we continue at this rate of importation and this rate of production in Ghana, we might experience farming. That's an opportunity over there. So,
for agri businesses like Babao Foods, access to capital to grow at a faster rate is a major challenge. Victor Febu, who provides some support services for Babao Foods, talks about its impact despite the tremendous challenges.
I feel that they are a new generation company, and they are really focused on making agriculture much more attractive to the younger generation.
Darko has huge aspirations for his business, but for now, the major priority is to attract young professionals into agriculture to transform the sector, which is the backbone of Ghana's economy.
Isaac Kaleji reporting. It's now time for the Crossroads Generation.
Deutsche Welle, learning by ear. Listen up, shape your future.
Hi everybody, it's time for the final episode of this season of Crossroads Generation.
We're standing at the crossroads, we're looking for our way. Crossroads Generation, our future starts today.
Before we get started, let's recap on what's happened so far in the lives of our young heroes. 18-year-old Mercy has a 3-year-old daughter, Linda. Her mother has been taking care of Linda so that Mercy can go to university. But Mercy's mother has had a lot to deal with, protecting her children from the bad influence of their father, Msoto. Recently, Mercy and her boyfriend, Nikki, decided to get married. But Nikki's mother isn't happy about this at all. So she talked to her new business partner, 19-year-old Dan.
She's the mother of your child, Dan, isn't she?
She is. Oh,
I can't believe this. I wanted to ask her if we could get back together once I'd built up my business and saved up a bit.
We have to stop the wedding.
Right now, though, we aren't really sure if there's going to be a wedding to stop. Nikki and Marcy got some very bad news. They found out that Nikki is HIV positive. They had a huge fight afterwards, and later on, Marcy went back to seek advice at the counseling center.
Marcy, I can't tell you how Nikki got infected. He may not even know himself. But is that really what matters now? You were ready to get married. You told me you trusted each other. Nikki needs your support now more than ever before.
I don't know. I have to go.
Our 26th episode is entitled Wedding Bells. We join Marcy in her dorm room at the university.
Marcy, you look so beautiful in my mother's wedding dress. I knew it would fit you.
Thanks for the dress, Tina. But I just don't know if I can go through with this.
Have you asked him about other women?
Nikki insists he's never slept with anyone. He says he's a virgin.
So how?
I don't know. And he doesn't know either. Although back in high school he had some trouble with drugs. Mm-hmm. I thought it was just alcohol and marijuana, but yesterday night I called him and he told me he tried other stuff. Just one time with a needle. One single time. And he doesn't remember whether the other person used the same needle or not.
Oh, come here. Shh. Oh, shh. So, what are you going to do?
I'm going to marry him.
Are you sure you know what you're doing?
Yes, I am. I mean, we'll have to figure out how to live with it. And I'm so scared of everything that will come. But I also know I still love Nikki. When I talked to the counselor again, she reminded me that everybody makes mistakes. Me too. And whenever I've made one, Nikki's always been there for me. He's always supported me. I can't just abandon him now.
Mercy, that's... I don't know what to say. I guess congratulations?
Thanks. Oh, I wish Trudy was here.
Me too. Hey, did you hear that Mukaraba's party did really badly in the election? They only won a few seats in parliament. Nothing for Mukaraba.
Yeah, I hope he'll have his own seat in prison soon.
Yeah,
that's what he deserves after what he and Munene did to Trudy.
Oh, no, not the tears again. Come on, let's go. I guess your family will already be waiting.
Banda, Kadu, don't go too far with Linda and Joy. Your sister Marcy will arrive any minute and then the wedding will start, with or without you.
Hello, Lulu. Hello.
Msoto, how dare you? I told you not to come near the children again. Have you forgotten the restraining order the judge put on you? You're not allowed within 300 meters of Joy.
Lulu, please. King Karubu says forgiveness...
Stop it. Don't you even start talking about your King Karubu again. You told our son Banda he would be a part of your so-called community if he helped you. And you sent him out begging on the street in the name of King Karubu. You just used this king to make money.
Lulu, I'm sorry. And I assure you, it won't happen again. Anyway, I'm not allowed to preach anymore.
Huh?
The leader of our group called me. He said I'd been misusing the name of King Karubu and that I'm...
You know what, Msoto? I don't care. Just get out of my sight.
Please, Lulu. Please. Just let me see Marcy get married. Look, she's coming. She looks so beautiful.
Listen to me very carefully, Msoto. This wedding is the last time you'll ever see your children. The last time. You hear me? From now on, I will call the police every time you appear if you don't respect my wishes. Is that clear?
Okay. This building at the end of the road should be the place where Mama Nikki told me to go. And I think that's Marcy arriving over there. Ah, who's calling me? I don't have time now. Hello? Dan Kanyama speaking.
Hello, Dan.
Dad? How did you get my number?
Never mind. Listen, son, I want you to come back home to your country and revive my business. Our business.
What? Dad, not this again. Come on, just leave me alone, all right? I am running my own business over here, and I am doing well.
Oh? And what do you think will happen when I tell the authorities in Kisimba that you're not only there illegally, you're also running an illegal business?
Dad, you wouldn't do that.
I can, and I will.
Dad, wait! Damn! I just don't know how he does it. The same thing over and over again, like a broken record. I can't deal with this now. I have other things to do.
We are gathered here today to celebrate the coming together in marriage of Nikki Jumbe and Masim Soto. A wedding is one of life's happy events. A day when you are allowed to shed tears of joy, like the bride, and be happy and make merry. So if there's anyone here who knows of any lawful reason why these two should not be joined together in matrimony, speak now or forever hold your peace. Well, seeing as nobody has spoken...
Wait. Dan?
Oh, no. What's he doing here?
Hello. I am Dan Kanyama, father to Linda, the bride's daughter.
No.
I came here to stop this wedding.
Are you serious?
Because I realized how incredibly foolish I was to lose such pals as Mercy and my daughter Linda.
You don't say.
There is nothing I want more than for us to be together again. But...
What?
How dare you, Dan? I'm going to teach you a lesson.
No, Nikki, don't.
But now I see how healthy and happy my daughter and her mother seem to be. I realize now that no one will be a better father to Linda and husband to Mercy than Nikki. Mercy and Nikki, I wish you all the best.
What?
I don't believe this.
Well, I actually asked if anyone was against the wedding, not in favor. So, as it seems that nobody has any objections, Nikki and Mercy, I now pronounce you man and wife. Congratulations.
And this is where we have to say goodbye to our newlyweds, Mercy and Nikki. To Dan, who changed his mind at the very last minute. To Mercy's parents, her brothers, her sister Joy, and her daughter Linda, at least for now. We've reached the end of this third season of Crossroads Generation Facing the Future. The story was written by James Mahando. Thanks for staying with us to the end. But wait, there's one other person who's still waiting to say goodbye to you. It's Mercy's friend Tina. You can find the final installment of our video diary on our webpage at dw.de/LBE. There you can also listen to all 26 episodes of the series, as well as to previous seasons. Take care and see you next time.
And now a reminder of our main stories. The party of Nigeria's president-elect Muhammadu Buhari has won governorship elections in the economic capital Lagos, fighting off a tough challenge from outgoing President Goodluck Jonathan's party. Kenya has given the UN Refugee Agency a three-month deadline to relocate all 600,000 Somali refugees living at Dadaab camp. And that's all we had time for. Join us again the same time tomorrow for more stories from the African continent. And if you have questions or comments on this program, then don't hesitate to write us an email to feedback.africa@dw.de, a text message to +49 160 9575 9510, or a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany. Till tomorrow, I'm Assunta Latus. Goodbye.